come here in Burgkirchen. I want to start with introducing myself. My name is Florian Seidel, and I'm Business Unit Manager of Industrial Informatics here at CTS, and we are focusing on digitalization projects, so everything from a shop floor, from the process control layer that gets connected up to the cloud, up to the ERP systems. And I have here with me one of our partners, Florian Werner, and he also wants to introduce himself.
Thank you, Florian. So I'm Florian Werner. I'm working for Xenium. We are an IT and management consultancy, and we focus on end-to-end delivery for IT projects and transformations. That means from the strategy and the project planning of a project leadership until the project delivery, like product owners and business analysts. So we cover all what is needed in an IT project, except for the technical implementation. That's why I'm very happy about this collaboration. I'm a principal consultant with focus on data-driven transformations, on project leads, and on business architecture, business analysts. So everything which is with data and project management, basically this is what I typically cover in projects. And today we're going to talk about data and about data in pharma. And let's start with Florian. What do you typically see in the reality, on the shop floor in pharma organizations when it comes to data? What are the typical problems? What is typically the things which they want to cover and they typically challenge with?
Yeah, most of the times when you come to a customer site and go into the shop floor and see everything, you will figure it out that there are very package unit driven organizations. So they plan something and they get a new production line or packaging line, and they get out their requests, and then they get their vendors that they are doing the implementation. So compared to oil and gas or chemical plant, where you have an overall DCS system that is managing everything, here it's more isolated and step by step. So there are always individual vendors, and this also resides in a system where it's very important that you also think about the data you want to get, because most of the times the focus is not on getting the data, but succeeding in the goal of the production. So to be or to ensure the production and to do so there. So specifically they get then everything in place, and it's very fragmented from the vendor systems. And it could also be that it's different variations of vendors that are there available for you. So it's most of the time very diverse.
So you typically have this diverse systems, this data silos, where like the prioritization on production, of course, not on data production. And so what problems typically brings that? Maybe not with the shop floor, but with the whole organization.
Yes, it's very interesting, because you then get the problems like everyone is expecting that you know already which kind of data you want to get, but in reality, it's then somewhere inside of the PLC, but you need someone that is telling you which pointer in the PLC is residing into your process value that is really important for you, because you don't want to collect all the data. You want to collect the necessary data for your process. So from my perspective, it would be much more efficient if you are designing in a very early stage from your equipment design, that you also say which kind of process values are interesting for me, because that's no surprise, honestly speaking. You know which kind of process values are important for you, because you designed it, or your process engineers designed the factory accordingly.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I think, not only in pharma, but especially there, a big reality. You have so many raw data points typically, which you just basically get via your process, or because you have to collect them due to regulatory requirements. But what is really important, and you, I think you also said the context is important. So you don't only need the data in their originating systems, but you need the context of the data somewhere else where you can also use it for the overarching benefits, isn't it?
Yes, and that already brings us to the way where we say it's very important for us to figure out how can you get this insight fast and also in a clear, as you mentioned, in a unified namespace that you're always using the same. What we are typically using is the ISO 95 equipment model to structure everything, that when you compare one line to another or one site to another site, that you have more or less a comparable architecture or something that is done also for other third parties always the same. So it is very important that the operator on the shop floor, a process engineer and a data analyst that is looking from a cloud perspective, for example, if they are talking about the same name, identify the same tag name, the same process value. Otherwise, it's quite tricky for them to talk about the same informations, because if the tag always has a different name, it's usually very, very hard for someone to translate in between. And even LLMs always have them to work for you to figure that one out.
Yeah, and hopefully figure it the right way out and not just like trying to figure it out the correct way. When you come to a client, is this unified namespace, this common domain language already there, or do you need to start with that for when you're implementing something? So is it already something which the client has figured out typically, or is that something where you need to start?
There are two possibilities. So I would say more in other industries, they have more standards regarding tag naming and hierarchy conventions, especially for pharmaceutical customers, as I mentioned before, with different vendors that are achieving process goals. They are not so focused on how are we structuring our data, how are we really identifying this. So most of the times we then figure out, even some sites sometimes have good practices, and then you have another site that is producing the same but has not the standard. And then it's starting a global initiative to figure out how can you standardize all this equipment level hierarchy in your organization. And this is not a task that is done in a week or two.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how much effort is that? Let's say one side is already having good ideas or already implemented a technical solution, but the other sides are lagging behind. So is it, as you said, it's probably not done in a few weeks. So how would we approach that? How long would it take for a company to achieve that?
Typically, it's very important that you identify then a person inside the company that is taking this task. So because it's a job that someone inside the company has to do, but it's a very important job that you're well connected in the company, because you have to figure out from the production perspective, are there different business units that are producing something different? So they normally want to be aligned, or are you on all the factories producing the same? That is always the big question, because then you could gain knowledge from these sites and put them together. And also, it then, for one customer, I think it took more than a year, nearly 2 years, to establish a standard. And that's not so easy task. And it has to do a lot with communication with the sites, figuring out what are their needs, what are they doing at the moment. And of course, for everyone, it's like a side quest for them on the site, because usually they are focused on the production and producing goods and not on getting a unified namespace.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think, one of the first examples, and we probably have a few more during our talk today, this is an organizational change. And it's not only, it's especially not only a technical implementation or a technical project, but it's a change in the way the company works and how things are done. So you have to anchor that somehow, as you said, as already internally quite soon, because if there are external people who try to do this change at some point, somebody from the company needs to take it over. And also, as you said, the people who are affected by this change, they need to be taken care of, because otherwise they won't accept this change. So you have to think, what are the priorities and not only the pains, but maybe also the benefits of such a change on the shop floor, but also on the IT side and maybe on the business side. So this is something where it's not one-dimensionally anymore. And I think this is also true for all the other things we're going to talk today about. So it's most of the time we have this technical perspective, but we as the implementation partners, but also the consultants, need an overarching perspective for this kind of changes. And I think this unified namespace is one of the first examples for that, which is quite interesting. We'll come back to these topics, I think, later.
Yeah, I totally agree on that part, because it's always you need the bigger picture, and this getting a bigger picture already brings me in the scoping of an industrial data fabric, because previously, like decades before, we said, yeah, for example, you need an historian or an MES system, and there is an enterprise decision to implement it worldwide. In reality, implementing the software meant to say, oh, I have the same software, I install it on first side, second side, third side, and continue here, but they work autonomous. They don't talk with each other. They don't have a connection to each other. They don't know about the other side being there or aware of it. So an industrial data fabric is then really, in that sense, something where we change this, where you have one system, one platform, where you do the configuration, where you have your data management inside, where you can put your tools on top of it to make analysis, to make your use cases work. So this is one system, and this is definitely a big change in your organization and how you're working. Specifically, when you think about this OT data integration, where you have the IT with all of its different departments achieving to have the servers in place to make the firewalls, the networking, the routing, everything working that you can communicate with each other. And also then the OT side of it, when you think about, okay, I have to install this server, I have to install the application next to my OT systems to connect to my OT equipment. And so that is like the technical part of it. And then you have also the operational part of it, where the persons on the shop floor that are working have to interact with the software, or then a process engineer wants to work with the data and get the information from the last batches and compare them with each other. Or a data analyst in the cloud wants to utilize this data. And all of them are connecting to the same system and working with the same environment. And so this is a very big change, because it's not only a new software, it's a new way of working. And yeah, I now mentioned the perspective from this industrial data fabric. Maybe you can also tell us what's similar to a normal, more IT-focused solution or implementation.
Yeah, I mean, for us, typically, such an implementation is like most of the IT implementations and projects we do. So from my perspective, it's more like we have to understand the scope, but also the effort, especially on the IT department, which such an implementation takes. Which team do you need? Which use cases and requirements do you need to fulfill? So it's more, at some point, some kind of more like a technical view, but also like more high level view. So which kind of team do you need? Do you have this management buy-in, and what happens if a project doesn't come to go according to plan? And also, if we then roll it out and go into the operations part of things, how do we hand over? To whom do we hand over these operations? And I think the last part is the most important. This is typically covered too late in projects, I think, especially when we look from the outside, so when we are not part of the project, is this part of handing over rollout and change management. Because people need to use these IT systems, and the people who use the IT systems are the ones who are then responsible if this IT implementation is successful or not. Because if you implement I had this case once, if you implement an IT system and just say, well, the technical implementation is done, and now please use it, and we are gone, basically, then people tend to not accept these new systems. Either they use it the old way they did it with the old solution, or this wasn't really beneficial to implement a new solution which can do more because they just use it as in the old solution, or you don't use it at all. So in one case, there was a system which was implemented 2 years before we came, and they say, we have this system up and running, and everybody is using it, and well, data is not really up to date anymore, but it's somehow kind of using. But then you already think, when a system is used, why is the data not up to date? So we're looking then into the teams, and the teams say, well, yeah, we have this new system, but our core processes we are still using with the old system, which we never turned off because the new system cannot cover our use cases. So what they had was an implemented system 2 years ago, which was not used. So all the data migration, you could throw it away. It's not, you have to migrate the data again. But first find out why people are not using the systems. And I think in IT projects, the easy part for me, typically planning the project, seeing what team do we need, estimating efforts, seeing what requirements need to be covered and how they're covered, and putting that in some kind of a roadmap or something like that, testing it, well, implementing it, testing it, and then rolling it out. But you should never forget the last and the most important part, which is this combining technology with processes and the humans behind it. And if you forget one of these three things, so either if the technology is not working well, you don't have a system. If you don't adjust and take care of the processes, the ways of working will not change. And the system won't be part of your organization, but also always something which is outside of your main processes. And if you don't care of the humans, and well, thank God we are still all here and important. There's not only AI, but then you need to take care of AI. If you then take care of the people who are using systems, then people won't use the systems, and then it will degenerate and not work the way you intended it to work. And then all your implementation work is out of the window. So I think you should always think of these three things, technology, IT systems, processes, and humans. And you need to combine these things. And this is totally different worlds. And this is why I'm so happy that we talk about this, because we have, I think, all these domains in view, but some different perspectives on that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also seen that before, and it's so important to always have this communication up and running, and to tell all the people that they should change. Even in in my former work at CTS, where I was a DCS programmer, I was seeing quite similar behavior when they said, oh, we have now a new DCS. The background is gray and not green, so I don't want to work with it. It sounds so stupid, because like the pictures or what they were seeing was exactly the same, even with more information or better information to work with, but it was different. They were working 15, 20 years, or yeah, in that sense, I think 15 years with this background and how it looked, and that really made them like, oh, I don't know, I don't trust this new software. And you have to communicate a lot, you have to be there. And I think this applies to all of the projects that you are there, and that you make the communication, and that you also, for us, we figured out it's very important that a customer has, we call it like front runner sites. Mm-hmm. In that rollout scenario, you first have to identify this front runner site, because you usually someone in the enterprise, or you already in the enterprise, know which kind of site is best suited to be a front-runner site. Maybe don't use that one site that has only one engineering person compared to another site that maybe has 20 and has more resources to be a front-runner site, that they can figure it out, that they have the chance to touch the software, to figure out what's working and how it can be implemented into their processes, how they can use it. They can figure out what are we going to do with it? How can we use it? And honestly, this always takes a lot of time also on our side. And what we were seeing with our customers, that at the first time, it's always a bit of a resistance from the end users, but then they start to realize, oh, it's bringing benefit to me, and then they proceed to use it, and they start to like it and figure out, oh, there is another use case, or there's something else. Maybe we should take the opportunity with this platform and use it. So when we go to your project back, what have you seen in that scenario? What was your experience in that angle?
Yeah. You already covered, I think, most of the points, which is quite interesting, but just in a different context. I think what is really important is when you start an initiative, or you have a new strategy which you want to implement in a company, you really need to take care that you get up and running. So you need either, if you have one big organization, some kind of key users or some people who are already convinced, or at least willing to help you with this project, or in your case, this front runner sites. And you need quite quickly something which you can show. It doesn't help if you have a nice PowerPoint presentation or some screenshots. You need some kind of pilot system, or at least a demo system, or best already a system which is running somewhere, what you can use to start the conversation on how we use it, what are maybe the pain points of the people who are affected by this change, because change is always hard and people are always resisting to change. I think this is something which is very natural for living beings. And also to understand what are the next steps, so not only the first use cases, which may be also part of a management presentation, but also these day-to-day benefits which come from that. So this was also the case in the project which I was talking about. We took a look and we had different sites, different countries, and we quite quickly understood which countries are using the system and which are not using the system. You could really see that because you saw which data is up to date and where you have many data accesses and which data access was like 2 years ago. And then you start maybe not with the best site or the best organizational part in your company, because they are too far away. But people who are trying to use it, and people who are using it already, say 70-80% of the time, and talk to them and say, what are your benefits currently, and can you maybe talk to your colleagues about that, and can you be an ambassador, we called it in this case, for the system? Mm-hmm. Of course, together with the site which are using it 100% and so, but we need some part where you start and to understand, and then let them tell the benefits of the system. Not you as a management consultant or an external partner. Of course, you can support the storytelling, but people will more listen to their internal colleagues, which they know, mm-hmm. typically than external people, which is fine, of course. But, the important thing is that you make a plan and come and go along with the people on the sites to understand that. I think the most important thing is to take the people seriously. So understand them and say, well, why don't you want to use the system at war, or what are your thoughts on that? What are your pain points on day to day working life? And I think if you find a day to day pain point or day to day benefit which they have when they come to the work in the morning or during lunchtime or at the end of the day, and they know this is something which this new system helps me with, this is something where they already then are convinced. And yeah, for us it was, I think the main part was understanding what is the current maturity of the implementation of the system, which are the people who are the people who are using the system, who are the people who are against the system, and try to somehow match them to each other and try to use the people who are convinced to convince the other, the rest of the organization. I think this was the most important part. And of course, then what the interesting thing when you start conversations between groups which typically don't work together but use the system together is that one part of the group has maybe totally different ideas and use cases than the other part, but which the other part can benefit from. So if you start this conversation and go in such an, let's say, even creative phase to say how can we use the system to make our day-to-day work better, different people have different ideas, but they can synergize and benefit from each other. And I think this conversation is so helpful in a software implementation process, because it's not only a technical conversation. As I said, the technical parts are important, of course, and they are typically difficult, but this is something which experts like us can cover. The other thing which we typically cannot cover is, or at least not directly, we can support it, is this organizational change which comes with it. And this is something which much more people business, let's say, and leadership business from an internal perspective.
I like your ideas or the insights you gave us about this topic, because I see the same for our implementation, specifically when this kind of trust level then exists, because this is always very important. A lot of initiatives, when something new is coming, people have to trust it. And how can they build up trust, as you mentioned, to use the system, to figure out everything is working? And of course, they need working examples that they see, oh, it's succeeding, it's fast, you are much faster than before, it's more reliant, you can see the whole system. Like in the industrial data fabric, you can see the whole system. It's not different applications or systems where you have to watch, where you have to see is everything running, or when you do your configuration, you have to jump back and forth, or everything is on one place for you in one platform. So that is helpful. But really, the benefit comes when the end user is really able to do something with it in its day-to-day work, and this builds up trust. Mm. And I think I have a similar customer where they said, like, yeah, when we're now onboarding a new site, it's, or a new system, it's quite easy for us because we are already so well known inside of the company. We either have someone that already promoted us to do it with the platform, or we find out who is going to promote us in that sense. So as you mentioned, it's like not an integrator or a solution consultant is coming in and saying, oh, that would be a great software to use for you and to solve your problem. It's more the day-to-day business of the stuff in the company that they are figuring out, hey, that could also help us in that problem, or could be a good solution for us to achieve this data exchange or to do something else, because they figure out it's working and they trust it. And this is also something, yeah, you cannot build up trust overnight. It takes some time and effort, but when it's there for you, it's very strong, because then it's really getting rolling in the industrial data fabric platform itself, because then you figure out, oh, all these use cases are not so different from each other. We have like maybe 100 different use cases, but at the end, it's like five classes of use cases that are all working in a similar way, but have different sources or destinations, but working the same in the same way. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I think we still have to, we're still not really on the data part, but I really liked one very important word which you just brought up, which is so good, trust. And it's that you need a trust in such an implementation project, especially on the shop floor, on the people who are working with it. But you basically need the trust on every level, because as we already said, it's an organizational change. It's not only an IT implementation project, but it's typically the whole thing is a transformation, or at least a change. And that means you need trust on every level which is part of this project, this change, which we talk quite extensively about already, how we can create trust on the shop floor, on the operational level. But you also need trust, well, on the management level, because they will pay for this change, of course. You need trust on the IT level, who need to implement it, and in the operational level, who is doing the operations part. And then each part, management, IT, shop floor, OT, have different perspectives and different priorities. So you have to, they need different things that they can trust this project, this transformation. Management typically needs trust. You can create trust in the management by doing a good risk assessment, doing a clear project plan, budget planning, and basically taking responsibility from them taking responsibility over for a project delivery. This is how, and then of course keeping them in the loop when you run into problems, consulting them, giving them information that they can make decisions, well-informed decisions, how to resolve these problems. And I mean, every project will run into. I have never had a project which never ran into any problems, because you can plan as well as you want. You always have something. In reality, something will come up, and then of course you need people who can resolve this. And the more trust you created on the management level, the better you can resolve problems which you cannot resolve yourself within your team. You need trust. You need also trust on the IT side. For IT, I think the most important things is they need to have transparency about the scoping. They need transparency which systems are involved or which systems will be involved if you implement new systems. You need a good staffing, a good operations model for both for the project, but also then for the operations later. And you need, I think, a good connection to users and management, so that IT can work. Because typically IT is not only there because we love good technology. Of course, we love good technology, but it's not only technology for the sake of technology, but for the sake of the organization or for the people who are working and creating value in the organization. So this is something where typically IT is sitting in between. And we talked about trust on the people on the shop floor. I'm not so sure how we can create trust on the OT level. I think there you have more expertise.
On the OT level, I think there is this difference between the IT and the OT, where IT is more focused on regular updates, keeping the systems with the newest patches, and if something is something you have to update, you just update it. OT has a very specific task and is more thinking in the time frames of their systems, like the DCS and SCADA or PLC systems, where they are implemented not for 2 or 3 years, but they like for a 10-year scope. They have to run and be maintained and only have small windows where they can be changed or upgraded. So OT has a very narrow focus on keeping the process running. And this, of course, then probably collides with someone from IT that says, oh, we have a new Windows update, just restart it.
or a new system, please migrate everything.
Yeah. Please migrate everything. Yeah. And of course, if we then are in the regulated industry, of course, the validation and quality part comes also to play, where you say, okay, how is my change management working and how I'm documenting it in my validation processes? So what are the changes to my SOPs? How do I document it? What makes it different? Because here also from a validation perspective, it's the same way, as I mentioned before, from a technical perspective, that an industrial data fabric now something new, because for the validation, it's also the same. Usually the sites are their own validation heads on their own. So they are usually maybe refer to global SOPs or refer to something, but they're not used to work this close together from a validation perspective as well, from a global to a site validation. So this is also quite similar to the other topics we touched, that in the validation, it's more or less the same, that they are very used to have their own way of doing things. And now we come in with a new platform that is originating from a global perspective and then can be used on the site as well. So it's also a change process in here that they figure out, how are we doing the documentation now? Because what I've also seen a lot in the regulated industry is that they keep buying and selling plants, and then they get integrated, and then you have to figure out, how is this fitting inside of the validation structure? How can it be integrated that it's working? And here, of course, these are additional stakeholders that they have to be also in the loop. They have to know what's going on, because they not use the system on their own, but they will ensure that the validation qualification of everything is working smooth, and they also have to understand what is the software doing. So they also need a understanding, what is the benefit, why are we doing this, what is a good way, why are we doing it this way. So they are figuring it out, this is how it's working, and then we can also incorporate it into the validation structures.
Cool. I think we have covered trust on different levels now. We haven't covered maybe the main topic of our conversation yet, which is data. And maybe let's start with trust in data. Of course, this is also something why we're talking about IDF. First, because of the two things. Of course, we need to be able to access and use the data, but we also have to trust data. And I think, so typically for me, trust in data has different components. Of course, I have to understand where the data is coming from. Is it correct? So the quality of the data, the consistency, I think something which, especially if you have different sites which have similar processes, sometimes they have the same data, so to say, but it's still inconsistent or different. Maybe for a good reason, maybe not. So this is something when you go on the global level, you have problems to combine this data. Which aspects of trust in data do you typically encounter when you come to clients?
Yeah, in the regulated industry, it's always very, very interesting, because for us, from a data perspective, we then already have like two different kinds of data that we are collecting. One is the GxP relevant data, so all of the data we need for the regulatory institutes. So this is the important data, maybe the data where the final reports are generated, and they are important for us because, you may be creating medicine or drugs and you want to ensure that they have the quality and everything you're expecting it. So it's very important, of course. And there is a lot of additional data that brings value to the business, to optimize the process, to do everything, to achieve better process related information, like need less energy. You will have the same product at the end, but you maybe need less energy, be more efficient on that sense. So there are always these different use cases and also different aspects for us. Is it GxP very important? We have a lot of regulation on it, or is it business value data that brings benefit to the enterprise, but it's not on the regulated side? And for both of them, it's important, as you mentioned, the context. Where is it? To which asset does this data belong? What context is it? So that you get a bit more like, I have here 24. What is it? 24. degrees Celsius, and it's a temperature, and it's here in the asset, then you have a bit more insights regarding what does this value means. And then specifically from the OT perspective, we then also have the timestamp, the value itself, and from standards like OPC, we also have a quality attribute that gives us this insight. Hey, is the sensor good? Are we out of range or something else? So that we get all these additional quality aspects that are very common on the OT level. And everyone, as an OT engineer, everyone would say, oh yeah, value quality and the timestamp is a very common pattern for me, so that I also have the quality if the transmitter is okay, or if the measurement is fine. And we also have this other normal attributes.
So you typically, what you say is typically what we need both for regulatory terms, but especially also, I mean, regulatory typically doesn't give you much benefits. You have to do it, of course, and it's also good that you do it from many perspectives, but it doesn't really give you performance boosts, effective boosts. This is something where you typically want to use the data, for new use cases, and if the new use case is only getting more efficient in some process or identifying inefficient parts of a process. For this, you need typically the context of the data, and you also have to integrate or combine data together. So, because only one sensor typically doesn't tell you much, you at least need some kind of timelines, or you need comparisons to other sensors on other sites to identify maybe another site is doing it better. So it's basically context and data integration. Is there something else which you need to create value from data, or is this basically the main two things when it comes to the technical part of
it? Then depends how you see data, because sometimes it's a bit more than just collecting data or transferring data. Because yes, one of the use cases is like getting the data from the shop floor, providing it to cloud application, they can do predictive maintenance or prediction models run on it, and then you can optimize your process. But there are also other insights or other kind of data you want to transfer within industrial data fabric. Sometimes it's like just files. Sometimes you have pictures or you have reports that are in PDF or text files, and you want to transfer it from one point in the system to another one. And you also want to ensure this working. And another interesting part can be a message exchange. So when I went to go on a specific example, what we were doing for a customer, and we were supporting them in generating a message, a global message broker that is always working with the same messages between MES systems and the respective OT process systems. So we had a set of standard messages that the MES engineers were always using to get or to communicate with the shop floor, with the line. And what we were doing in the industrial data fabric is we were then translating these messages into specific commands that it can be understood from the shop floor system. So if it's, for example, a somatic batch system, then we were translating the message that somatic batch can understand it. If it's just a PLC and it has some standards, or it's the same for this vendor all the time, then we were creating a template that it can also be then reused again for all of these lines with this kind of PLCs in place, so that that we really make it more transparent for us which kind of messages are used and how they are used. So to standardize the MES workflow, and also to have more standards how we can connect this OT systems. And then when you have a somatic batch system at the other side, you can reuse it. You can reuse the same messages. You can work with it again. And then it's not just about I record this process data, but it's like the message exchange and being a message broker in between, not only for real-time data to capture or to historize it, but also to really ensure that different systems can talk with each other and be really the interface in between.
And especially if you have different sites with different equipment, this, as you said, this message transfer, but also some kind of data harmonization, that maybe the data fields are completely different names in different sites, that on a higher data layer, you can basically harmonize and standardize these data fields, that you can combine them and compare them, is something which I had in a project and which was basically one of the... So the original goal was basically just have a data layer on top of many different sites and different devices. And the main problem was not so much the data layer itself, it was quite standard actually, but to understand that we had like 50 different devices and each device had more or less the same measurements, the same data, but completely different interpretation and naming of this sensor data. And then the most important thing was, well, we have to somehow combine on a higher level this data to something which can be understood globally, and not only if we say this device sends this data and this is the same field name as on the other side. So I think this data harmonization is really important and also quite beneficial if you want to compare sites and also combine data to something, not only reports, but also for operational improvements and efficient gains.
Maybe you have a concrete case where Inmation Pharma environment has actually changed something.
Yeah, I think the previous use case that I was mentioning regarding this message exchange is a big change how the organization operates. So because previously there were MES engineers that were interacting with each different process and engineers or DCS programmers and to figure out how can we interact with each other for every specific batch workflow that they were implementing. And this now got translated into the MES focusing on how do I structure everything so that it's working with the standard messages. Can we identify everything? And then on the other part, where it comes to the process, it was more like, okay, is there already a standard interface that is in our collection, in our communication classes? Yes, there is one. Okay, let's use it. Oh, there is none. How can we identify that it's generic enough that we don't have to create hundreds of it, so that it's generic enough for us to communicate in this way? So this is the important part. So it really changed the way how you address this kind of use case or this kind of requirement that you say, hey, previously we said, oh, we have to do this now in the initiative, and then they working with each other and doing it, and then someone else on the other side is doing it maybe completely different because they had probably the same requirements but different engineers that had not the same background, that don't have the same information. And this then also got into the situation where we, as you were mentioning, really had a lot of promotion part on one side, that it's always like, hey, we are introducing all these new messages for you, that the MES side and the OT side can understand it for each side when the initiative was rolled out, and also that they can work on it and that they can see it. They have a demo system, they can verify it, and then they can always check it. So in a classical way in the regulated industry, we had a DQ and P system, so a development, qualification, and a production system, where we split up, and on the development system they were able to see and work, how is this working, how are we going to interact, how is it changing the way we are thinking at the moment to this new way. And it really helped overall, it really helped a lot. But of course it needs some time in the organization, and that brings me of course back into the scoping phase of such a program, because when the industrial data fabric in that part was designed and initiated, we were for some of the integrations where we have to do integrations, the scoping and everything was already done 3 or 4 years before, because you can imagine when you get a new line, it takes a lot of time before, and like the decision how this line will be implemented was done long before the industrial data fabric initiative was even announced or promoted in the company. So you then have, for the first implementations, have definitely this friction where they said like, yeah, I've no idea why are we doing this now. Okay, or we're now a bit late in the game in that sense.
Yeah, especially when you have these long time frames, and maybe even the people who did the scoping or did the decision that we want to have this are maybe not even there anymore. Maybe things have changed, we have a new site implemented during that time. It's always important that when you take the decision for such implementations, that you really have to make sure to write down and make the core team understand why they are doing it. And especially when you have this long time frames, you have to also understand what is really the vision, or mission statement of the thing, which is really hard requirements. And what on the other side can you maybe adjust to the new reality of things when things are changing during the time of an implementation, or between the scoping and start of an implementation, or the during the implementation and the rollout and the go live of the implementation. So what parts are hard facts, hard requirements, and what is basically the thing where the music plays? So where you can still adjust things, adjust also for benefits of the shop floor or of the IT, and make create a common understanding on every level for that. So why are we doing this implementation? Why do you have to prioritize now in implementing a new system, despite it not bringing directly benefit on the shop floor, because people have to change things, and then typically during change processes, you first have a dip in productivity, so productivity goes down before it goes hopefully higher than before. No? So this is maybe also why you have this resistance typically. They say, I don't have the time or the priority for doing this project now, because I have to work on our core processes and create value where I typically create work as on the shop floor or on IoT side. And creating this common understanding of a vision or a goal where we want to be in 2 to 12 months or 1 to 2 years is really important for such a project. And also adjusting it to the new realities. And for this, you typically need a strong leadership on every level. So on project sponsor level, so management typically needs to have a buy-in. But also on the people who are doing the operational implementation. So typically you have a project lead, you have a technical lead, you have a lead in the teams which are affected by the change. So on the IT side, on the OT side, on the plant side. And these people have to have this common understanding and talk as one voice, maybe with different perspectives, but they have to be, all of them have to be convinced that this is good what we are doing. When you have one crack somewhere, if management is not convinced, well, you can stop this project immediately, because, well, if you don't have the management support, then for whom are you doing it? But also on the other levels, because then one part of the puzzle will be missing at the end, and then this thing cannot succeed.
So you need all these perspectives, and you need to be take care that everybody is on board for that.
Yeah, I like these insights, what you were mentioning, and specifically what we were seeing is after then some implementations, as you mentioned, not the first, but then maybe also not the second, but the third, and then when it's moving on to the next implementations, it got much more easier. Everyone knows what to do. Everyone was also, from a timing perspective, we know which kind of information do we need when to be successful, that all of these processes are much more smoother, and everyone gained knowledge from every stakeholder. They have more knowledge what is going to happen, and we already did it successful, so how are we doing it again better and faster? And this is what we are then seeing, that it's then getting faster and faster again to a point where it's very common and usual to do it a new way, where at the beginning it was very different, and now it's very common for them. Mm-hmm. They really know, oh, okay, this is the next step, what we have to do. And it's then really, really cool and fast when you see how it can progress.
Yeah, that's really then the part where the fun starts, so to say. Of course, we're not doing that for the fun, but then you see that there is really big interaction, new ideas. People are also starting to think in new ways, and they trust, we had this trust before, they trust the process, but they also trust the team in it. So this is something where you not only learn to make things better and make things faster and repeat things which have worked before and don't make the same mistakes, but also trust the process behind it. And I think this is something which is very important in such implementation projects, is you should trust the process, both at the beginning and at the end. At the beginning, most people think, well, I don't know, 50% of implementations fail, I don't trust it, so it probably will fail. You should trust the process already at the beginning. If you have experts which have done that before, and they are here to help you, then you should also just give them the benefit of a doubt, so trust them at the beginning and let them convince you. But at some point, when you're part of such a transformation, you should start to trust yourself, that you also can be part of this transformation, and this transformation is good for you and your organization. And I think this, then the responsibility also shifts to the internal organization and the operational people. And once this trust is gained in the organization, then really the, as I said, the fun part starts, because then people come forward with new ideas. You get this, and this is, I think, very important. You don't only want to have a go live and a rollout, but you also want to have an evolution part after that. So you implement the first use cases, and I think this is especially true for the industrial data fabric. You typically start with basic use cases, which of course are creating value, but are not the end of the line. You can do so much more when you have the data in the right place. And you should start latest when you did implemented the industrial data fabric and the first use cases, start to have this conversation, what else can we do? What else is creating benefit when we now use the data which we now have in a structured way? And I think you should never forget this point, to trust the people in your organization then to take over and do more and cool things that you much more than you originally had in your 5-year plan anticipated like 5 years ago, because you typically anticipate the important things and the basic things and the straightforward things, but this creative part afterwards you have to give to the people and give them also the chance and the ability to take over the system, make them their own.
Oh yeah, I totally agree on that part, because it's also so interesting when you then see the industrial data fabric as a platform be available on an enterprise level on the site. Then, as you said, it really makes fun, because then you can start to really think about what else should we connect, because we did it for a specific purpose to get this in place, but now we can do so much more and can make use of so much more technology in that sense, that it's really amazing what kind of ideas are really emerging from, oh, now I have it in place. Now I can install here the software and connect to a new data source, and boom, I can transfer this data also to the cloud, and it's working for me. It's a standard way now. It's not nothing where I have to figure out all the firewall rules or how can I establish this kind of communication. It's just like, oh yeah, that's my PLC. I want to connect it, and I need the data over there to support this new predictive maintenance initiative to figure out if it's working or not. Then it's getting much more faster from the timing perspective, because you have the platform in place. And when it's in place, it's much easier for you to extend it.
Yeah.
Also on the regulatory aspects, because then it's already here. You've already shown that all of this core functionality of the platform is working for you. So don't have to think about, oh, how is the validation working for you? No, it's just like, oh, I want to do it. And then you can be much faster on that point. And we definitely realized that a lot of our customers are then changing their view of it. So as you were mentioning, like this is my first use case I want to implement. It's getting so easy that they are focusing on much more difficult use cases than before, and say like, hey, maybe we can also tackle this kind of problem that was not possible to solve for the last 20 years, but now we really have a software where we can also tackle this problem.
Yeah, and I think this is quite interesting now that I think about it. You should already plan for that and take care of that when you do the initial scoping or strategy for such a data layer. Because let's be honest, it's a big investment. It's a big change. It will take time. It will probably create some tears, or at least discussions. And it's a long way until this thing is up and running and the data is at the right place. And I think already at the beginning of such a scoping phase and a strategy phase of such a project, you have to be aware that it's going to be a long way, because you're going to change things and you're going to need to integrate silos which have been there before. But you should not only put in your vision statement we want to do that because we want to create one specific use case, but we want to enable our organization for more data-driven use cases, for new ideas. I mean, the AI hype is now, I don't know, a few years old, not so many years. And now you're going to be happy that if you have the data at the right place, because you need data harmonized in one place for using it for an AI. If you now start to create your data systems, it's going to be too late, because you will miss this hype. So whenever you think about industrial data fabric and data harmonization, think not only about the use cases which you are doing today, but which may come in 5 to 10 years from now, which might come because you have a technology advancement, but or because some clever person in your company, and there are clever people in your company, has a new idea. So it's not only a system for a specific use case, it's an enabler for much more data use cases which you cannot think about today, but you can be sure you will be ready for them. And I think this is really a strong statement which you also can use when you start in such a scoping phase. Don't only do it for one use case, do it as an enablement for the future.
Oh yes, that's a very, very good statement from your part, because it's so important that you don't forget your vision, where you want to go, where you really say, oh yeah, that's my goal, where we want to go, because honestly speaking, it will take some time and it will be not finished in a month or two. So you really need some time to get everything running and to go over all these hurdles through and through. You really need this shining star somewhere that you say, okay, this was the idea why we were doing it, that you then also can do it. And as you were mentioning it before, it must be communicated also inside of the company with the statements, because we also were seeing it in different facets, where when the leadership was changing for the initiative, this can be a smooth handover, that it's continued as it was before, or it could also get into a position where you're frozen again and have to question yourself, hey, are we doing still the right thing? Is it something where we have to move? Where are really the steps, or where are really the goals where we want to go with this program? And that could be then a bit hard in between, that the organization itself figure out their statement, where do I want to go? Because specifically the leadership on the platform is very important for you, that they are convincing internally the others.
Yeah, and I think, how did you call it, the shining star, where you try to head? It's really important, but also a challenge to get the right level. So if you have a very high level strategic mission statement, like we want to be a data driven company, this probably will survive a leadership change, typically. But it's too broad, too intransparent for an operationalization for the real change in the company. You need to then basically put it down. What does that mean for us? What does this mean for a technical solution? And if you have too narrow goals in a project, like we want to have access to this data field, this might not be true in a few years anymore, and this might not survive a company change, like a leadership change. So you need to create something in between which is stable enough for a few years, so it survives during the project, but it's also concrete enough that the people who are doing the project work and the implementation work and the change work understand why they are doing it. If we implement an industrial data fabric just for being a data-driven company, well, nobody will be convinced by that. If you tell them, we want this for understanding our core processes and the plants and do, increase our efficiency by 5% and so on, this is much more concrete, and maybe not concrete enough still, but this is something where you can translate it to the people who are affected by it. And I think this strategic anchor for such a project is so, so important. And it's not only then, because many projects just start with a system decision. We want to implement this system because we want it. This will not survive the first two or three escalations in the project, and they will come, of course. And I think this, but also this is a conversation which is beneficial, because already then you identify the first use cases and the first parts in the organization where you want to start with such a transformation, when you think about the strategic anchor and this mission statement of a project. So you should never skip that. Another thing which I've seen is, and this is also when we talk about data use cases, is sometimes we identify a cool use case, and then you start, evaluating the project and try to find the data, and then you find out, the data is nowhere to be found. So you have a use case, but you don't have the data. What now? Do you have an idea? So what would you do when you see, a client has an idea, but the data is not really there yet, not collected or not accessible in the systems?
I can definitely see or have seen this in our customer projects, where you then have someone from the upper management saying, oh yeah, when can I go with my Microsoft HoloLens through the factory and see everything digitally, and in reality you're missing the network cable on the PLC. So typically it's always this small part, because from an OT communication perspective, there are all the tools available for your, or there are so many solutions that you can connect to it. Usually it's more for you to identify, okay, if I don't have the data already in the system, how can I get it? Because it's sometimes it's that easy, like, oh yeah, I just have to plug in a network cable to the PLC and I get the data, or I have to figure out like the firewall rules, how can I access it, how can I do it, and that's most of the time the challenge, that you say, oh, I have to identify the equipment, I have to figure out, can it communicate? Because sometimes it's also like, oh yeah, it's a process that cannot communicate with you. So it's not all not so common in the regulated industry, where I would say it's definitely a lot of times there is a process control system where we can connect to that has a certain protocol. It's more in other industries where you say, okay, maybe I have to start with installing a sensor to figuring out.
Yeah, I think this is, well, the one of the, I would say from a data perspective, very good parts of pharma. You have so much data, so plenty of sensors and systems which collect data. So it's not about a question whether you have a data or not. It's more like you have typically too much data, and it's more like a data integration problem then, or a data access problem, as I said, firewalls, connecting systems and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or data identification problem. Mm. So yeah. I have to identify which of the data points that I have are supporting me in the long run, not like bold statements that someone is throwing out and saying like, oh yeah, we connect the PLC and then we collect all of the data and historize it. And then you figure out, yeah, there is a lot of information that is not useful for you at the long run or even at all. And then you have to go back and do this, all of this exercise again and say, oh yeah, now I have all the data, but maybe not the right context, or I probably don't. It's an information point, but it has no value to the process. So why should I capture it? Why should I store it? Why should I maybe transfer it to the cloud if no one can use it? So it's then more in that sense, creating data swamps.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere on the IT landscape, so
the old data lake. Yeah.
The good old data lake, where all of this data fabric scenario and all of that originates from, really the need that everyone was figuring out. I would say 10 years ago, everyone was saying, hey, just send the data in the cloud, someone will figure out how to use it. And I think this statement changed. So it's really, hey, I have here a new equipment that I'm implementing. Hey, let's figure out what kind of information is important for our process, and then already connect it and collect it, because then we can figure out later how we can improve the process on it. But to know which kind of informations are important for you, that is for the engineers creating the new line, an easy task at the point when they are creating or when they're building up the new equipment. Mm. It's a much harder task for someone to figure out later, come back and say, oh, what is the important process values? Where are they here? And then you need maybe more persons in the room, because you already had a project where they were deciding this kind of process and figuring out what is important to make this running. And these persons or this group, it's not only one engineer that is doing it, but like this group of experts that are facilitating installing the new line, for example, they are knowledgeable for what kind of data could be interested to connect.
Mm. And I think this is exactly the point. So for these questions, a data lake typically was an IT solution. So it was a technical decision. We put this data in the data lake and we are done. But for really having benefits or value from data, you need a cross-functional team. You need the people who are understanding it from a technical point of view, but you also need the people who are understanding it from a process and organizational point of view, which data is important, in which forms is it important, when do we need it, where. And for this exactly, it's this cross-functional discussion you have to have. And you have to understand basically all the different layers which are part, and we already talked about that quite extensively. IT, OT, shop floor, business, front office. So you need to connect these perspectives for having a good design for data. And I think this is exactly what we are typically doing in projects when we combine our expertise. So both the technology point of view and the let's say organizational business point of view combined with some kind of leadership in all these different dimensions.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's like the synology of bringing all of these aspects together, because at the beginning you say, oh, I have a new software that I'm implementing, but in reality you're establishing a new way of working, a new way of thinking. And as you mentioned, it's like the foundation for real AI use cases, that you have a solid data foundation, that you have a solid platform where you can rely on, where you, as an enterprise, as a company, have trust in it. That you really can say, oh, I trust how this is working. I have no fear that it's breaking. I have no fear that it's doing something that is not expected. I really have to trust this software. And this builds up over time and brings everything together. So really this time, and in reality it tells me also, when we were doing this the first time, 2018, with a customer in the regulated industry, it's really different. And honestly speaking, right now when I look back to it, there were so many hard steps at this time, that for now, these are the easy parts for us, where we now figured out, oh yeah, we saw a common pattern how to tackle these problems, or how to guide a customer to the ways and tell them, like, yeah, you have these goals. This is something that is not done in some weeks. We need more time, but we now have a lot of experience gained from these projects, and honestly speaking about these programs, because they last for more than just a project. There are multiple projects in parallel that are going on and exceed their own, and like involving mission statements over the time, where you say, okay, what do I want to do with this platform? And this increases with the maturity of the company, because you get more trust in it, you get more knowledge about what can we do with this software? What is it good for? And then really take on here the stage where you see, oh yeah, we can support someone how from the technical perspective, how we can connect all the systems, how we can set up the architecture, how we can do this. This is the easy part. And then we can also support you with What were our lessons learned from previous integrations? What kind of schemas are well known for us already and can be adjusted and incorporated into the normal workflows, that it's running smooth? And it will take some time, but after the fact, it really makes you more agile and faster in the implementation. And in all of this part of the OT and IT data communication, to really establish a communication layer that is more transparent, more centrally configurable, that you have one place to look at, then it's much easier for you than to pick up, oh yeah, for this site I need that. And I need another tool to do something else. So it really makes your overall life easier.
And I think about our discussions up to now, I think we covered mostly the difficult things which we have encountered, which also caused projects to fail, like the strategic beginning, the change management at the end. Because the middle part, we typically have covered, as you said, we have experience in that. We have typically the we've seen the invariance of projects with many clients. We know what are the typical problems. As a project lead, you need to have a good project plan, stakeholder communication, risk management, team you can trust, or at least you need to set up a team which is cross-functional and capable of these things. And you take care of the technical part of things, which you just talked about. And we typically have covered these things because we know that from so many different clients. We have had so many projects where we see these invariants and these things which is, let's say, normal project work. We have a plan. The plan will sometimes fail. You have to assess what fails and adjust. You have the typical technical problems. For me, typically, it's data migration and data harmonization. But the things which we typically also as consultants have to really make sure that the clients can take care of that is this strategic management buy-in and foundation. And the change management, which of course we can still be part of, but at some point the internal organization has to take over. Because we cannot, and actually I think we don't want to stay as an external forever in a company. At some point this thing has to run on its own. And it's not only, I mean, we and the organization put much effort during a project into it, so we don't want to let it fail, of course. So of course we support it as long as possible. But it needs a foundation and also then the people who internally take over at some point. Everything else we can cover, of course. And this is something where it's quite interesting that we have the same perspective about what is easy in a project. For us, easy. Of course, it's still effort and still from time to time long days and long nights sometimes. But something which we can cover and something where really an organization and the people in an organization have to take over at some point.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree on the part that the customer has to take over. And what I then really like is this kind of new way of collaboration for us, specifically with our customers, because we are not only here to make a one-time installation, but we will also support them going on. And what does it mean? As you said, they have to build up their own system owners that they can work with the software. And then it gets to a mutual understanding of the software where we then can exchange informations and can also support them in new directions where they want to go and they have never done it before. But also it comes then to a very interesting point. What I see is where you then really have more exchange on a deeper level of the platform, that you really have someone on the other side. You can talk about all the technical or organizational aspects on a quite different level as before, where they all said like, oh yeah, it's a new software. Now you're really talking about deep technical fundamental stuff where you say, hey, how can we achieve something with this new use case? How can we do it? I've already seen these functionalities in the platform. How can we transform it into a real running use case, into a solution that is running on the platform? And also on the other side, they will figure out some stuff and say like, hey, have you seen this before? And said, no, let's talk about it. Let's figure out what you're doing at the moment. And that's I think for me, one of the most exciting parts of it, where you're not talking about the basics, but when you really can go into the advanced part of the platform that you really can exchange on a deeper knowledge level.
And you feel that the platform has arrived, so to say, in the company, that basically the implementation project is done. And now it's only, you can, of course, you will develop it and do maintenance, but you can feel it's there now. the main project is successful and it will stay now in the company. It's now implemented. I really like this point as well, because then you can say, but well, my work, so to say, is done. Of course, I'm happy to support in new ideas and using it, but this big chunk of this, we have implemented a new system, a new way of work, was successful. And this is so, such a good feeling, because it's when you work in such implementation projects, it's much work, not only for yourself, but for all people involved. And then you know that this work had a reason, and now you see the fruits of it, so to say.
Oh yeah, I definitely like this. And yeah, that's hopefully also something where we are then on the Pharma MES conference in Berlin, that we can talk about with the customers, like on which kind of level are they at the moment? What are they doing at the moment? Where are their pain points? Are they struggling to connect systems? Are they struggling to transform them, these connections, these data points, into real use cases or solutions? Where are they at the moment? So for me, that's always the interesting part to figure out, hey, what are you doing at the moment, on which kind of level are you communicating? And on this broad variation of aspects from the platform, what is the important part you're working on? Because it could be you're working on change management, or it could be you're working on the technical aspects of something. And that is really interesting for me to figure out what are the key challenges at the moment.
Yeah, I really like the conversations there, because of course I want to understand where they are and where they want to go in the next years, but also give them some new ideas and directions what could be done, because sometimes people don't even know which solutions might be there. The problems in business are typically the same, like this data integration, harmonization layer, and to just also show them what is already possible, and show them that other customers typically struggle with the same things and maybe make mistakes that they don't have to make anymore, because other companies did the mistakes before them. So to have these conversations and this exchange of knowledge between people, this is what I'm really looking forward there as well. This is something where after these 2 days, my head is so full of new ideas, and hopefully the head of other people I talk to as well, that I don't want to miss these days as well.
Yeah, I also really like this conversation where you can then fall into the deep conversation about what is going on at the moment and what are the needs, because you then maybe, as you said, you figure out, oh, that is something we already did before, or sometimes also, oh, this is something very new. How can we address this issue? How can we figure out what it's done, and also figure out what is the correct software solution? Because there are, as you mentioned, so many softwares out there, and there are some really good, helpful tools, and someone has to tell you where are the tools and how can I use these tools, and how can we incorporate it into the company. Then it really makes fun for you, because otherwise you maybe even don't know that these tools exist.
Yeah, and I mean, data is important and will still be important in the next years, even getting more important. So this is, I think, something which everybody has to address in their company. So how do we get the right data to the right places and to use it for our new use cases? Because I think data can create so much more benefits and value than it currently does, because it's in some deep down system somewhere not integrated. And to understand which data use cases people have and which data data problems they currently have, and maybe they give them also some ideas how they can solve at least the first step quite easily. This is something which I'm really looking forward to.
Oh yeah, specifically for the topic of communication and figuring out how far are they at the moment. Have they already established a global strategy to address all these data initiatives? I think specifically in the current year where we are living with all this AI hype, I think everyone is thinking about, hey, how can I get the data? How fast can I access all my systems? And there are some pretty smart tools to get all this data, but you always have to consider all of the steps about security, validation, and the organizational change. And then even if the software could do it fast, it really supports you if someone has walked down this road again or was able to do it previously, then it's much easier for you to do it a second or a third time to multiply, because that really makes sense and makes them fun also, because you see how you improve over time.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, most companies are in quite some spectrum on their data initiatives. Some people, some companies have very good ideas on a site level, local level. So there are some local ideas and local data usages which are not, but only used there and can currently only be used there, would be beneficial to put it to the global company to use. And they struggle to get this local, very specific ideas up for the whole organization. And on the other side, some companies have their data AI strategy, but don't know how to operationalize that, to implement that in the company. So these are typically the two points where companies stand, how to create from a strategy the current, the real systems and the real value, and how to get my local specific data use cases to the whole organization. And I think for both, we have ideas and solutions because we have seen that with companies before.
Yeah, and both parts are very interesting. So if you go down from the global scale to say, okay, I have this initiative, how can I roll it out to each side, is very, very interesting and has a lot of doing with figuring out how are the different sites working to get this running. I always like this kind of perspective. But also the other one is a very interesting starting point, because you say, okay, I have this initiative, or I have this idea, I have, or probably already have this solution, it's working here, so how can it scale? How can I just multiply it to another site and don't have to do all the work again? And there are so many interesting ideas that are flowing then around how you can figure out, hey, how can we create use cases that are scalable from the beginning, that they already designed with the mindset that they can be scaled to multiple lines on a site or to other sites as well. So already taking this into the equation when starting all of these ideas, that is really cool. That is something that drives me.
Cool. So we're looking forward to the pharma manufacturing in Europe and looking forward to the conversations there.
Yeah, really happy.
So see you there, guys.
See you soon.